What's up, ladies and gentlemen? You now entering the Daily Wave, hosted by Mr. Christopher Green himself. On me, I'm just a fellow truth speaker. I go by the name of Doctrine. Welcome to the Daily Wave, starring Christopher Green, alternative media king.
Green Wave Radio Live. Hillary Clinton is here to save the day. In fact, she's in Jerusalem right now. As Israel and Gaza are bombing the shit out of each other, and she's going to save everything because she cares. Hillary Clinton cares about you, cares about Israel, and cares about Hamas. So she's going to broker the peace deal. I'm not really sure how that's going to work. Them bombing the crap out of each other here on a daily basis, going on 7 days now. Very violent, a lot of people being killed. This has included, of course, women and children over the past few days, but very few people really seem to care, really seem to understand what's happening over there in that part of the world. With me today, I have Vinny Eastwood of the Vinny Eastwood Show. Vinny, great to have you on the program. You know, we've been kind of doing a roundtable biweekly. In fact, make sure to stay tuned because I'll be on Vinny's program, his first hour. Vinny, what do you think about all this infighting in the Middle East?
Specifically what? Palestine, Israel, or...
Well, here's the first question. Do you understand it? Because honestly, I'll hear a lot of people say, in fact, I've watched a few videos where they say, you know, I've read hundreds of articles on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and I still don't get it. I mean, this is coming from educated people. I mean, what are they fighting over, in your opinion? And, you know, where does this go? Why are they fighting?
Well, I have the saying, in the end, everything comes back to the beginning. And if you want to have a look at the real history of Palestine-Israel, you've got to go way back to the time of Rome. The Jews were the only people who would not bow to Caesar and proclaim him as a god. This is what Rome did. They'll invade your country, set up their infrastructure, aqueducts, roads, etc., and then tell you to be grateful for it. And one of the conditions of you being able to live, essentially, is you must proclaim that the emperor is a god. The Jews were the only people who would not do that, thus they were the first people in Europe to be completely misplaced. They were snapped up in wagons, carts, horseback, and were purged from the land of Israel, where they'd been living for quite some time, and they were scattered about Europe. And also Rome decreed that Jews were not allowed to own land or property in that regard. So naturally, being a very industrious and intelligent people, they went into things where you could basically get a lot of wealth but not actually own any real land or property. They became jewelers, goldsmiths, lawyers, bankers, etc., and became very, very prominent in that field. And while in their absence, a Palestinians moved into the land of Israel where the Jews had previously been living and set up shop there. They were actually led by their own prophet, just as Moses had led the Jews into this promised land. So they sat there for a few thousand years, and up until World War II, there were Jews and Palestinians living together in peaceful harmony. There was no real problems. After World War II, on the other hand, there was this thing called the Holocaust. And my interpretation of the Holocaust is that essentially you're no longer allowed to question any Jew or any Israeli or the state of Israel or anything, because you can instantly say there was a Holocaust. Suddenly everything has a reason for it. So let's say, for example, you kill 1,000 Palestinian women and children for absolutely no reason, and in a really horrible way, like drop white phosphorus on them so their flesh melts off their face. And you go, that's really awful. You guys are criminals. And they go, ah, there was a Holocaust. All right. That's
right. The free pass.
Okay, so that's brought us up to today. The people who financed Hitler were, in fact, Zionists. Now, people don't know the difference between Zionist, Jew, and, say, something like a racial group, so Cathar. So, Jew, Catholic. Okay, it's a religion. So, have you ever, I don't know, made love to a Catholic or had a Catholic baby or something of that nature? It's not a race, it's a religion, okay? You are a Republican or a Zionist, okay? It's a political spectrum. Zionism believes that Israel is theirs and everybody else is scum, slaves to be exterminated and or be complete and utter slaves to the Zionist state, right? And there's many rabbis and what have you that have talked about this and really has said horrific things about other races. And basically, it's really, really a messed up situation. And the race issue, I think there were 12 tribes of Israel or 6 tribes. I forget how many tribes there were, but there's things like Ashkenazi Jews and a number of other denominations like Sephardi Jews and what have you. So, firstly, anybody who says anything about Jews, Zionists, or Cathars, or any other anything to do with in the general spectrum of that is instantly labelled an anti-Semitic Holocaust denier. So they can get away with anything, literally. You know, the Holocaust was for Jews what 9/11 is for the American administration. Hey, you're taking all our rights. You're surveilling us illegally. 9/11. Yeah. Hey, you're killing and enslaving people for absolutely no reason and kicking them off their land and building up these big settlements with giant walls and making pregnant women stay in checkpoints for like 5 or 6 hours or something like that and executing children while they're playing soccer for the Palestinian soccer team with sniper rifles and whatever. There was a Holocaust. Okay, so that's the Palestine-Israel situation from then till today. Mm-hmm. Currently, Israel is the worst human rights violator in human history, okay, according to the United Nations. Speak what you will of the United Nations, but when they issue resolutions saying that Israel has committed war crimes, it's numbering in 180, and that was like 5 years ago. It's probably in the 200-something now. So they've had more UN resolutions against them than anybody else through history. Why, on the other hand, have they never been invaded by the UN? Why have peacekeepers not come in? It's because half of the peacekeepers are actually American military who are supplied by the United States, essentially. And guess who backs Israel on the Security Council every single time when all the countries, I think it was like 160 member states or something, some ridiculous number, they all vote against Israel, and the United States is the only one that's sticks up for them. But because the United States is on the Security Council, which is actually the real world government there, because they hold all the purse strings, all the military conducts and everything, the rest of the people are kind of like the Congress versus the president, kind of irrelevant, one congressman versus the president, doesn't make a difference. And so here you have it, $4 billion a year, mostly in weapons being given from the United States to Israel. And then you have this conflict situation. So Palestinians have been living there for thousands of years. Jews came back after the Exodus. So whose promised land is it? Is it the people who moved in after the people who moved in got kicked out? Or is it the people who moved back in after getting kicked out and then kicking out the people who moved in after they moved in? You know? It's just kind of like, it's freaking stupid.
Yeah, isn't it arrogant that people think that they own land? Like, hey, this land is my land. Like, this is mine. Like, you don't own the land. Nobody actually owns land. I mean, the land is part of the earth. Why is it that, you know, this is ours, not yours. I've got to protect this. It's interesting that
they had to turn it into a militaristic state because Zionists believe that land is theirs. And so they started up a compulsory recruiting program. You were either able to, A, go into the Israeli Defense Force and play a part in the military machine of killing Palestinians, or B, you have to become a full-time rabbi and try and preach the ways of the Torah and the Judaism and Zionism and tell everybody to kill the Palestinians.
Not a lot of options there.
So those are your two career choices in Israel starting off.
Yeah. So yeah, you're pushed one. Yeah, we're pretty much into the same rhetoric, whether or not you're fighting the wars or you're leading the people, through religion. So
yeah. Now, geopolitically, on the other hand, you have a look at the position of Israel on the map, and the position that it occupies is actually very unique. It's the only Western nation in the Middle East. So naturally, the United States, being a global empire, wishes to retain said foothold, hence the $4 billion of weapons per year. Now, the reason why people don't know any of this is because Israel has many, many, many lobby groups, as well as many, many, many Israeli citizens in the White House who, don't want people to know all of this stuff. So I watched a movie one time called, I think it might have been called the Control Room or something of that nature, but it took a Palestinian story, okay, and it took that story, the truth, and as it was, and then it broadcasted it to the Americans after going through the filtering process, okay? Several boards of representatives who would view a news story, say, I don't like that bit being said, I don't like that being said, blah, 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 blah. Turns out there's about 17 organizations that have to pre-check any news story about Israel before it comes to the American market. 17!
Wow. Yeah.
All right, so here's the filter process, just in a nutshell. Here's the original story. Israeli tanks fire on a Palestinian house full of women and children who all die. Hamas, being democratically elected by the Palestinians, retaliates by firing unguided, glorified cherry bombs at Israel and kill nobody and damage virtually nothing.
That's really
as a result, now, as a result of being attacked back in retaliation, Israel then retaliates and kills 1,000 Palestinian men, women, and children, injures 2,000 men, women, and children, and blows up 400 critical points of infrastructure along the Gaza Strip, including the parliament buildings, power stations, gas lines, and roading, and markets, and schools, and anything else you can really think of that's of any infrastructural capacity for the Palestinians. Now, this is how it gets reported in America. Deadly, deadly terrorists attacked Israel with weapons of mass destruction, and Israel was forced to defend itself. Aren't they lovely?
Yeah, that's exactly how it's pitched to the American people. And that's a really good assessment. I haven't heard it put that way before, Vinny, but that's really what's happening. And then it's positioned as an act of self-defense, and it's almost like Israel is just baiting this. I mean, they are baiting it. Every once in a while, they got to go in and destroy the infrastructure, destabilize their opposition. My question is, in your opinion, is this where it stops? I mean, is this where, at least what we're seeing right now in Gaza, or is this going to open up a wound, a much bigger wound, in a much, larger conflict throughout the Middle East, which I think a lot of us
I don't know. Worry about? Well, that's what a lot of people are worried about, and in my opinion, if there's something you've got to worry about, stop worrying about it, because your worrying won't do anything. Mm-hmm. The other element of this equation is that there is actually a huge movement of Israelis who are against Israel within it. I think it's a country of about 8 million people, and 2 million people took to the streets some time ago in a nationwide protest. In fact, when I interviewed David Icke a number of months ago in May, he was reading out recent stories that Israelis had, in fact, immolated themselves. They poured gasoline on themselves in public squares and set themselves on fire in protest for how Israel is treating the Palestinians. So it's not one way or the other. What we're talking about is a dictatorship that controls Israel, a genocidal, psychopathic dictatorship who has no qualms about killing kids, no qualms about lying, and love war, because the only way that they've ever managed to expand their territory since the beginning of the State of Israel was with conflict. Israel has the fourth largest military in the world, thanks to the United States, obviously. And during, I think it was the 1964 Six-Day War, they managed to defeat Syria and Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Egypt and Lebanon and Jordan at the same time, annihilated them all in 6 days. They took out all of their aircraft, and then whenever they sent their tanks out with no air support, sitting ducks. Okay, and they managed to expand their territory massively during that campaign, and it's only been in the last maybe 10, 15 years or something that they've relinquished such control over it. But now the situation is so... people think it's really complex. It's not. Okay, you know how the American government and not the American people are tyrants? The Israeli government and not the Israeli people are tyrants. It's the same thing. It's the same methodology. And incidentally, the Israeli government is funded by the American government.
So you think, is it the United States that wags the tail of Israel, or is it Israel that wags the tail of the United States? Who do you think's in control?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't think either the United States is in control of the United States or Israel's in control of Israel. I think they're both simply puppets to the globalist.
Yeah, hence their, good answer,
hence
yeah.
their propensity for genocide.
Yeah, so isn't it amazing that this genocide and what we're seeing perpetrated by the United States and Israel is rationalized by the... How do people... Because I talked...
Well, let's define genocide. Let's define genocide. It's defined as the specific attack and destruction of a particular group of people. Okay. If you're living in an open-air prison camp, and if you are a Westerner and you're going through there, I've spoken to some of my mates who've been to Gaza Strip, pointing a camera at a tank on top of the hill, these Palestinians in the van scream and grab them and shove them down to the floor. And it's like, don't point anything at them. They'll shoot us. Okay? Imagine you're walking down the street at any given time and you could be killed. That's what it's like for somebody living in the Gaza Strip right now. Cold water, no hot running water. Every building is made out of scavenged building supplies. The place is an absolute bedlam hellhole. But they even have a boy racer. They even have a boy racer club. That's funny though, isn't it?
Hard-hitting and in your face, as usual, as serious as a heart attack, according to Vinny Eastwood. In fact, I was just laughing. I saw the shirt he's wearing on. He's got his camera on via Skype. It says, I love to expose scum baggery. So please support the Vinny Eastwood cause. Vinny, where can our listeners buy those shirts? They're hilarious. I want one myself.
Well, you can get one off the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. They're only 20 New Zealand dollars each, I think, and I'll just mail them out to you. And also, Chris, I've got some announcements to make. My YouTube channel, for the first time, has gotten over 1 million views.
Awesome.
So that's, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Little guy down here in New Zealand managed to get his videos viewed 1 million times. I thought that was worth a song and dance about, you know?
That is a ton of views. Well, you keep at it, that'll double, triple, quadruple, and who knows, you have 10 million views this time next year, depending on how hard you hit it. So you were doing a really good job breaking down.
You're approaching 7 million views, Chris.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, the people are getting the message out, Vinny, so it must be resonating. So... I guess it's cool to see that, but man, I feel like we could get even more than that, Vinny. I mean, I feel like there's so many more bodies that you know, need the truth, and so many more people that need to hear the message. So that's why I think it's important. We got so many of us out there in the trenches. So we can kind of just tally all of our views together, and it's one big message of truth, and that's part of
hope. Well, this is part of a realization that I had. If you actually take all the alternative media sources, you know, the people who've got like a million views or 65,000 views or anything like that, all these little YouTubers out there that are putting out the truth, and you combine them, I think we're actually bigger online than the mainstream media is, Chris.
I think you could make a strong case for that. That's why I think we've seen the mainstream media, they're really trying to co-opt the underground/alternative media and kind of utilize the format we've been using. I mean, everything's a YouTube video now, and everything is, you know, social media related. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting when you think about it from that perspective. I wanted to ask you, and I don't know how closely, I'm sure you've been talking about on your program, but we have a newly spawned secessionist movement here in the United States. We literally have 50 states that have now signed petitions, of which the White House and whitehouse.gov has to respond to, asking for peaceful withdrawal from the Union, from the United States, a dissolution like what we saw with the first Civil War. What do you think about this? Do you think this is a completely organic movement, just people being extremely frustrated by a lot of the issues and topics that we cover on a daily basis? Do you think that there's any, part of this that could be maybe malicious or, started by the government itself to maybe target patriots or to data mine the most extreme constitutionalists or these types of people? I'd like you to weigh in on that.
Well, they're doing that anyway. I mean, you have a look at the list of suspected terrorists that the United States is kind of looking at, and it's like, returning veterans, people who talk about the Constitution, patriots, Christians, and so on and so forth. Basically, if you care about the United States and you don't want to see it turned into a ridiculously horrific police state, you're a terrorist. And Americans, I think, I mean, a lot of the Americans that I've met anyway, they don't like going into conflict per se, unless they really, really have to. They're very reluctant to be in conflict with somebody. They actually, in general, they adopt a very similar approach to what the United States did prior to World War One, where it was a non-interventionist sort of retractionary type foreign policy. And I think that what Americans do, instead of going, "Hey, you're an evil bastard, I'm going to come over there and attack you and kill you," that's what the government does. But the American people, on the other hand, just go, "Man, this guy's a douchebag. I'm not going to hang out with him anymore. I'm going to, bye bye." And I think that's really what the states and the American people now are doing, kind of en masse. Really.
Do you think it's warranted? I mean, is it warranted that if the American people, and we'll just use America as an example, and then, there's a liberty movement all around the world. So it's not just, we're so arrogant here in America at times, all about us and what's happening here, and the tyranny that we're experiencing. But this whole thing is global. This is, part of the human experience. But is it warranted if the American people, for example, can't get anything done, and they're well aware that we don't even have a two-party system anymore? I don't really think we ever did, but it's a one-party system that, the president and these government officials that we think we elect, we don't really elect, that they're not working for us. They're working for corporate interests. They're working for the establishment. They're working for the global oligarchs. Is it warranted then that states would say, look, we're going to secede? We're going to literally break. Texas, for example, says, they've collected over 100,000 plus signatures last time I checked. They're saying, we're not going to do it anymore. We elected to be a part of the Union in the first place, to join the United States. We're not going to stay involved in something that is going to bankrupt us. I mean, isn't that the prudent thing to do?
Well, have you ever had a relationship with a woman and you realize that woman's sucking you dry and you just can't do it anymore, and you're getting really and you're getting emotional blackmail and abuse all the time, and she's kind of controlling the household and dominating you, and you're like, I'm walking away from this. That's what's happening.
Yeah,
I think the relationship between the states and the United States has become so strained that now it's time to get a divorce.
And I think that that's a good way of putting it. Something I find interesting is, you know, the petitions say for each state to have the right to peacefully secede, peacefully, peace. You know, although that has good intentions, and I think that probably is the intention of those people signing the secession petitions. I mean, is that realistic? Peaceful secession? I mean, how peaceful, for example, let's use your divorce breakup. How peaceful does a divorce usually go? How peaceful does, you know, the relationship, let's say with your girlfriend, you find out she's been cheating on you. Is that usually a peaceful dissolution or vice versa? Not really. I mean, usually it's a violent one. Usually it's a it's not a good situation to be in. So could there be a peaceful dissolution or peaceful secession movement? Or is that just a facade?
I don't know. It depends how vindictive your partner really is at the end of the day. And you only find that out once you break up with them. Once they don't have any loyalty that they have to show you as your partner, then you find out who they truly are. And I guess we'll see. But you have a look at the policies of the United States government, and you it's just... It's insane tyranny, essentially, a psychopathic tyranny, a technocracy. They believe that they can control everyone, and I don't think that they're going to let this one just slide. I mean, if your golden goose was escaping, would you try and catch it and put it in a cage and clamp it in irons and keep getting those golden eggs, or would you go, if you love something, let it go? Ultimately, I think that they would probably just go, yep, let's try and lock up that golden goose in Guantanamo Bay and set up a production line so that we can keep sucking down them eggs like there's no freaking tomorrow. You know, it's just like, who cares? Ultimately, whether or not it's going to be peaceful or violent, the point here is it right to secede from the United States? Is it right to abolish tyranny and become independent? Is it right to fight for that independence? I believe it is.
Yeah, I believe it is as well. And, you know, it's funny, we haven't really had a lot of mainstream people call for secession, although I've seen people like Ron Paul talk about it. And in fact, if you go back even in his video log on YouTube, you'll see he's talked about secession many times before, really throughout his career. It's about as American as a topic or as American of, as a thought that you can have, the right to secede from the Union. If you feel that you've been, you know, you're still a part or you are a part of a vindictive, oppressive, genocidal, debt-ridden, laden government, you have every right to consider at least the option to break up that relationship, which is exactly what Ron Paul has talked about. I think this is something, I mean, personally, I think this is something that is really is in its nascent stages. I think it's, you know, one of the catalysts has obviously been the reelection of President Barack Obama. So I think it's catalyzed the movement a little bit. But this was in the air and has been in the air for years. It's just like the American Revolution. I mean, before the American Revolution and the Declaration of Independence was put out there to Great Britain, people were already ready to declare independence. I mean, it was in the air. People could feel it. And that's what we have in America. I mean, that's I don't think everybody feels that way, but there's a growing minority that do value, just like you said, liberty. They value freedom. They value individual freedom and liberty. And, you know, they're willing to walk away. It's, you know, and it could be a very dangerous situation to be here, because we talk all the time about this government being a vindictive, genocidal, controlling government. Are they going to let states walk away peacefully? Are they really going to do that? I don't think so. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens.
Freedom is not free. It comes with the highest costs, the cost of blood. And the Tree of Liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Don't be afraid that you might enter into conflict or anything of that nature. Your ancestors in the United States gave their lives so that you could live on and live free. Sometimes, usually within the space of a generation, people will descend from freedom into all-out tyranny. And now it will be your turn to shed your blood for your forebears. And it's just the hand you were dealt. Do not shirk that responsibility. Take it for the honor that it truly is, that future generations will be free because you forego your comfort and your feeling of security for them, those that are yet to be born.
Yeah, that was actually beautifully put, Benny. And I think there's a lot of people that do feel that way. But I guess what's sad is that, you know, the great majority, maybe this is how history always works. Maybe it's a few that are willing to do that, to, you know, willing to give themselves up in a way, or almost a sense of martyrdom for that. But I don't see it among the great majority of the people.
Well, did the great majority fight in the American Revolution? No, it was about 3%. In fact, that's the general rule of revolutions. That's the small, determined minority that actually overthrows tyranny. And their determination is essentially put there because of a lack of choice. The revolution was fought because King George was petitioned and begged and demanded that he relinquish his grip on the United States and the United States economy and its people. And each and every time they were denied, and it was only as a last resort. You do everything that is necessary to avoid a war. Anything and everything to avoid a war. That's the lesson that people have really got to understand, is that it is so much more effective waking people up with information than waking them up with a bullet. And if it is possible to peacefully have this happen, I believe that the only way it could happen in a republic is for those individual liberties to be preserved. But the only way that people could even understand what their liberties are and what they must fight for and what they don't need to fight for is through an informed public. Previously, the media, that was their job. They started up as what's called the Fourth Estate, to be watchdogs on the powerful and controllers of society. Watchdogs for the very specific purpose that those people have inordinate amounts of power, far more than the average American. And if they were using that power for nefarious ends, it is the media's job as the Fourth Estate to find it out, declare it, and inform the public of it so they know what's going on, so that they don't, well, basically get taken by surprise. The difficulty now being is that the current media is owned by those very powerful interests for which they're supposed to be exposing. So now it is our job in the new media to expose them and to save human life. That's essentially my bag, bro, is that just got to give people the information so that they can make proper decisions. And in so doing, you can save life.
And I actually think that's happening. I actually think that the spread of information in within the truth movement, if you want to call it the truth movement or give it any other name that you want, I think is doing an effective job. I mean, honestly, I think we're doing an incredibly effective job. You know, I guess you just have to have a little bit of faith, too. It isn't kind of interesting I'm saying that, but you have to have a little bit of faith that through information, through truth, through education, that people actually take that, make informed decisions, and make positive decisions going forward. You know, people do value, I really do believe they value individual liberty. They value individual freedom. I even heard somebody put it the other day, said, I even value, not me personally, but someone said they value it above God. They said if God didn't value their individual liberty, they wouldn't believe in God, but then individual liberty comes first. And I thought that was an interesting way of putting it and also thinking about it. We got to go to a quick break. I'm here with Vinny Eastwood of the Vinny Eastwood Show. Everybody stay tuned. I'm going to be on in his program at the top of his first hour as well. So everybody hang on. We'll be right back.
He said, son, have you seen?
I'm here with Vinny Eastwood. Eastwood of the Vinny Eastwood Show. I'm, of course, Christopher Green, as Vinny would say, serious as a heart attack. You know, Vinny, you always crack me up. We were talking about your shirt earlier. I'm looking at your website, some of the updates here. And for the logo of YouTube, it says eugenics. There's a logo for Facebook. It says follow Vinny Eastwood Show on Fashbook. And then you can follow his the Vinny Eastwood updates regularly via Twitter. That's pretty funny.
It's actually a British pronunciation called Twatter.
Twatter.
Like, have you ever heard a British person call another British person a twat?
I have heard that before, actually. Twatter. All right, follow Vinny Eastwood on Twatter at Gorilla Media. Very interesting. Oh, Vinny, so
I'm on the eugenics Facebook Twitter social networking guru.
Absolutely. Continues to grow. Continues to get the word out there.
I'm kind of like a cancer like that. I just, you know, can't get rid of me. I'll just keep growing.
Keep growing. You're kind of like stage four. You know, it's a terminal cancer that's going to get his way at the end. And you want liberty. You want freedom. And you will stop at nothing. And you will metastasize into a gigantic tumor.
I wouldn't say I'd stop at nothing. I feel that the key to balance is being able to go from either extreme and then being able to come back to the center again. So you could be extremely angry and then come back and be extremely zen and then come back into the middle where it's a little bit of column B and a little bit of column A. You know, that's what I call balance. And when I work hard. You know, last night I was up till, I think 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever. I did 5 hours of radio yesterday, 3 hours on Hagman and Hagman. Today I'm doing the extra hour of radio with you. After today's show, I'm doing an hour with, and I've also got a dude for Chris Dwayne. You had him on your show the other week, didn't you? Yeah, he's on second hour of my show today. And then I'm going to be calling John Perkins, the economic hitman, to schedule him on my show at a later date. And then at 9 o'clock Eastern time, I'm doing the Dark Occulted Mysticism show with my co-host, Freighter X, and we'll be interviewing Bob Tuscan. That's a pre-recorded. And then directly after that, I'll probably be doing 2 hours with, Nighthawk from freedomslips.com. So yesterday did 5 hours, today 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. Tomorrow I've got 4 hours of radio to do, minimum, and I might be doing more than that. But then it's Thanksgiving weekend, and thank you, Lord, thank you, American Freedom Radio, for not allowing us to do a show on those last 2 days. Because honestly,
it made it an easy decision for us, didn't it? Oh, thank God.
Honestly, I couldn't even make it to Christmas without having a holiday. You know what I'm saying? You ever get that kind of twinge in your neck or that cloud in your mind that lets you know that you're overworked and your body's just going to give out at some point?
Yeah, honestly, a lot of us, I think, are feeling that way. At least I'll speak for myself. I mean, I'm feeling that way a little bit, especially just with what's going on too geopolitically in the news. I mean, these are just heavy, atrocious topics to be talking about.
I don't think so, Chris. I don't think it has anything to do with what's going on right now. I think it's a residual effect of the election. The election burns us out, man. And it's the most frustrating time of the year. You know how Christmas is the most lovely time of the year? Elections are the most horrible time of the year because you know 100% that every word that comes out of these scumbags' mouth is a lie. And you know 100% that every candidate that would be telling the truth gets demonized and can't be elected.
Yeah.
So the frustration kind of builds up and bubbles over like a baking soda and vinegar.
Yeah. I mean, it really does. And because we're so plugged into it and because we know what's really going on, it's so incredibly frustrating. And, you know, it translates into, I don't know, dissatisfaction, anger, frustration. I don't know what the best word is, but yeah, there's a little bit of a burnout that hits. And at, you know, times too, as hard as you work too, Vinny, and you know, all of us, I think, attest to, you know, you're listening off hours you're doing on the radio. But honestly, I'd equate radio hours almost like, you know, one radio hour is the equivalent of three working hours. I mean, the amount of work, preparation that goes into putting on a show, to covering the hard issues, the amount of education. I mean, the amount that we read and study and the articles that we consume on a daily basis, and just all the content that we have to look at to be informed, educated hosts, if you want to call us that, it's a ton of work. You know, and, you know, I don't know. I just wanted to kind of put that in perspective for the audience because, you know, I don't know if they realize that.
Well, and I have a little bit of a different approach. Like, Chris, you often prep for your shows by reading articles, doing analysis. The way I prep for my shows often is listening to that person and maybe having a quick conversation with them before the show, and then determining on a kind of a ping pong idea spitballing type fashion about which way we're going to take the show. I've essentially got a lot of production work to do. So for every hour of radio that I do, it takes around about an hour, maybe an hour 20, in order to edit and upload that in audio and video format. Okay, so, but the uploading for the videos takes a lot longer, and I usually have to leave those till overnight. So yesterday I did 5 hours of radio, and it took me maybe 6 hours to edit the videos and the audio. So yesterday was a 10-hour job, and today I'm doing 6 hours of radio. So I'll probably have to do a full 6 hours after I've kind of finished up all my stuff today to do that. And tomorrow's a 4 hours, and so essentially I'm attempting to be what's known as mediagenic or create a celebrity essentially. The way you create celebrity is you splash that personality, whichever it might be, across different mediums. So you want it on video, you want it on radio, you want it on blog postings, and you want it on different networks, different websites. You want as many people collaborating and connecting with you in as many different ways as conceivably possible. What this really does is it gives you access to audience, access to potential colleagues, potential helpers, potential investors, potential subscribers, potential donors, and what have you. And because I'm the only person in the position to be invited on such and such shows. I mean, you have a look at my Vinny on Other Shows tab on the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, and I've been on well over 100 other radio stations. And in many cases, multiple times.
Sure.
And I'd recommend people go to the Vinny on Other Shows page and listen back to the back catalogue of Vinny Eastwood on Greenwave Radio. We've had some really, really, really awesome conversations. I mean, to the point where the listeners kind of are unanimous and demanding that we do more shows together. And so we kind of capitulated because, in my opinion, the audience is my employer. And I do what my employer wants, right?
I think that's a good strategy. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking, too, when you were speaking, I mean, it's one of those things we need better automation and we need leverage because the fact that it's a one-to-one or greater ratio on post-production after the fact, after we've done the shows, there's got to be greater efficiencies around that. And, you know, that's what's tough. I mean, that's what people need to realize. This is the alternative / underground media.
I call it the new media, because if you're not the new media, what are you?
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's the new media. This is the media. I mean, really, we should drop alternative, new, underground, and all. We are the media. That's how, you know, drastically things have changed. But, you know, people need to realize, too, we don't have the resources. We don't have the protection that these big institutional media platforms have. This isn't CNN. You know, CNN isn't acting as Vinny Eastwood's, backup or anything like that. So, you know, that's why it's so critical and so crucial that we have the support of our audience. They continue to share what we do, and they continue to support our cause. I mean, that's just the cold, hard reality of it. But it's also what makes it so beautiful, too. It's what makes the media that we do so amazing, quite frankly, because it's real. It's not Vinny Eastwood or myself reading teleprompters. We're not talking BS. This is real. It's real life. That's why people tune in. That's why they like it. That's why they enjoy it. That's why it resonates.
Mm-hmm. It's so much more interesting when you're talking to somebody about a political issue that involves police, when you know that that person has been arrested previously, because they know what they're talking about.
Makes it a completely different experience.
Yeah, and the mainstream media, they've got no such experience. Okay, I've talked to many of these journalists in New Zealand. They don't know nothing, Chris. They don't know anything. Honestly, they're really dumb. Okay, and they're vacuous, and they don't care either. Sure. The only thing that they're really doing is counting their money and wishing for their next Gucci handbag that's going to be bought for them by the studio producer for doing a good hit piece on somebody who supplies natural vitamins, and then we'll also be rewarded later on with a trip to Tahiti. And they go, "Oh, great! Aren't I a fabulous journalist by doing it and reporting on exactly what I'm told and exactly the way I'm told to do it? Aren't I just wonderful?"
Isn't that exciting? I'm here with Vinny Eastwood. Stay tuned. He'll be on his program right after this. AmericanFreedomRadio.com, GreenWave.com, Alternative Media TV. I'm Christopher Green, hard hitting as always and in your face. Stay tuned.
Learn to live again. It's times like these you give and give again. It's times like these you learn to love again. It sounds like these time and time again.